It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We call it Infrastructure Week.
Administration is working every day to deliver the world-class infrastructure that our people deserve and, frankly, that our country deserves. We're here today to discuss the urgent need to rebuild and restore America's depleted infrastructure. We're going to get this infrastructure going.
Well, this time, it really is Infrastructure Week. But the Republicans didn't do it. President Biden on Monday signed the more than $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill, now known as the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. The package was pared down from the original proposal to spend $2.3 trillion to upgrade the nation's roads, bridges, ports, power lines, and broadband internet. But Biden said the version that passed showed that Republicans and Democrats can work together for the good of the nation.
Because of this law, next year will be the first year in 20 years American infrastructure investment will grow faster than China's. We'll once again have the best roads, bridges, ports, and airports over the next decade. And we'll lead the world into the 21st century with modern cars and trucks and transit systems.
The president promised that the upgrades would help America compete with China and other nations in emerging industries. The law contains $550 billion in new funds, including $66 billion for Amtrak and other rail lines, $65 billion for broadband, $47 billion for responding to wildfires and increasingly frequent storms, and $7.5 billion for electric vehicle charging stations. Now, the fight for the Build Back Better bill. The CBO says it will release its scoring of the other part of the infrastructure package this Friday. Stay tuned. Steve Bannon surrendered Monday to face federal contempt charges after finally being indicted on Friday for his refusal to comply with subpoenas issued by the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. Bannon, a former Trump strategist who no longer worked in the White House when the insurrection occurred, was released pending his trial. Bannon faces two counts of defying a House subpoena seeking documents and testimony. If convicted, he could get from 30 days to a year in jail on each charge, plus a fine of up to $100,000. On Tuesday, the committee is expected to consider what to do about Mark Meadows, Trump's former White House chief of staff, who similarly defied his subpoena. Thank you, Senator Patrick Leahy, for your service and for deciding, as he said, it's time to put down the gavel. At 81 years old, the longest-serving member in the Senate, Patrick Leahy, senator from Vermont, announced that he will not run for re-election when his eighth term ends next year. Leahy was first elected in 1974, and on Monday, in announcing his retirement, he said, quote, "It is time to pass the torch to the next Vermonter to carry on this work for our great state. It's time to come home." I hope Senators Feinstein, Grassley, Cardin, and a few others are listening. And in the House, Democratic leadership might want to listen as well. Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and Jim Clyburn are all over 80 years old, just saying. And if you feel that the tension is high out there, part of the reason could be three trials currently underway, all racially charged, all controversial. Let's start in Charlottesville, Virginia, where the federal civil trial against two dozen white supremacists who organized the Unite the Right rally got underway 3 weeks ago yesterday. Jurors there are deciding whether the organizers engaged in a conspiracy to engage in racially motivated violence. Nine plaintiffs brought the case alleging the planned violence. They're suing for damages to compensate for the injuries they sustained in August of 2017. The plaintiffs laid out their case that the rally planning amounted to a conspiracy using more than 5 terabytes of digital evidence, including a leaked trove from Discord, to show how far the white supremacists went to allegedly get the fight they were after. Among the two dozen defendants are some of the country's most notorious racists: Jason Kessler, the main organizer behind the Unite the Right rally; Richard Spencer, a featured speaker at the event; Andrew Englin, who publishes the hate site The Daily Stormer; Matthew Heimbach, a white nationalist leader with ties to far-right factions in Eastern Europe; and Christopher Cantwell, who was nicknamed the crying Nazi after a video showing him weeping upon learning that he was wanted by authorities in connection with the rally. went viral. The nine plaintiffs are the kind of people that the defendants were protesting. They included an ordained minister, a Colombian-American undergraduate at the University of Virginia, an African-American landscaper, and a multiracial paralegal who was a co-worker and friend of Heather Heyer's. Four of the plaintiffs were struck when a 20-year-old white nationalist drove his car into a crowd of counter-protesters, killing Heyer. Another plaintiff, Marcus Martin, needed surgery for a broken leg and ankle, and Natalie Romero, who suffered a skull fracture. Those not physically injured say they suffered lasting emotional distress and trauma that in some cases caused them to miss work. It's kind of a circus where noted white supremacist Richard Spencer is, for instance, representing himself because he can't afford an attorney. Moving down to Georgia, the judge on Monday denied a request to remove the Reverend Jesse Jackson from the courtroom made by the lawyer for one of the three white men on trial for the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, a black man who was guilty of jogging. Lawyer Kevin Goff, who represents defendant William Roddy Bryan, said Jackson is, quote, an icon of the civil rights movement whose presence could influence the jury in a case where race has been the focus. Jackson was simply sitting in the back of the courtroom with Arbery's parents. When Kevin Gow, for the second time, decried the presence of black pastors? Well, to his credit, Superior Court Judge Timothy Walmsley said he would not single out any particular individual or group of individuals as not being allowed to be in the courtroom as a member of the public. And then he added, quote, if there's a disruption, you're more than welcome to call that to my attention. And in Kenosha County, Wisconsin, Circuit Court Judge Bruce Schroeder on Monday abruptly dropped the gun possession charge against Kyle Rittenhouse right before the lawyers began giving their closing arguments in the teen's trial for fatally shooting two men and wounding a third during a protest sparked by the police shooting of a black man last year. Rittenhouse had faced a misdemeanor charge for illegal possession of the AR-15 rifle he used to kill Joseph Rosenbaum and Kyle Huber and wound Gage Grosskurtz. But the judge said the law on rifle possession could be interpreted to mean that people who are 17 years old, as Rittenhouse was at the time, can legally carry firearms unless they're short-barreled rifles. It makes absolutely no sense. And that's one of the reasons this judge is coming under fire. Before the trial started, he was criticized for barring prosecutors from calling the murder victims victims. But he allowed the defense to call them rioters and looters. So today, Tuesday, names will be drawn to determine which 12 of the 18 jurors who heard testimony will actually go into deliberations, and the deliberations will begin. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.